Welcome back to episode 175 of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here in Chess Journeys, we love to explore rapid ratings gains and the glory and great feelings with that. But we also dive into the plateaus and even the pits of despair. If you're like me and you're in another one, you lost another couple hundred points, I don't know what's going on. But if you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon Chess Journeys. I want to thank our queen level supporters. Tim Everett, Scott D4B6 Joe, Matt Bush, Jay Garrison, Donna Rich Burgess, Brandon Hallside, Jeff Pearson, Tobias Brex, Bob Berger, Nicholas Harrigan, Rich, Bradley Fenner, Fletcher Ray, Nathan Pearson, Christian Glaw, Andrew Rumer, Travel Mocha, Mohammed Ibrahim, Vasant, Bruce Campbell, Ian Mason, and King level supporter, Ian Samples. If you want to appear on the show, a great way to do that is to fill out the Google form in the show notes. If you've already done that, do it again. There's no reason not to. I want to make sure I get to you. If you're interested in getting better at chess, which I feel like you probably are, Noel Studer has a couple of great programs. There is a code in the show notes that you can use. It supports the show. It gets you a discount. It supports Noel Studer's awesome work. Everyone wins. Okay. Oh, and one last thing. I started on YouTube something called The Road to 2200... Lee Chess. Okay, this isn't The Road to Master, but I am having fun with that. I have about 11 episodes recorded already, maybe 7 online. So it is going pretty well. I'm having fun doing it. If you enjoy it, let me know. I'm curious to hear if it's something I should keep doing or if I just scrap it and move on with some other things. All right. Well, let's get to the guest at hand today. We've got Dan, otherwise known as James. He's an adult improver. He's got 3 cats and he has a busy career in public affairs. Also, he's got a history degree like me, so we're sure to be the best of friends. James, I'm not actually sure what to call you. Welcome to the show, and have you had a chance to play any chess yet today?
Thank you for having me on. Today has not been much of a chess day. I've played a couple games of Blitz, which I try to avoid, but that's about all I've had time for today. Well, that and the World Championship match. But
okay. Which, by the way, what an exciting time.
It is wild.
Yeah. It's like... Ding is like, I want to draw every match unless I lose, and then I'm just going to instantly win on demand. It's quite impressive.
It was like he was the Terminator today, and I don't even know what to say about it. I have been rooting for Ding the whole time, so I was really glad he bounced back the way he did.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm of two minds. One is like, I want to root for the older guy, right? I kind of like that story. Ding seems like an amazing guy. But then the other hand, I'm like, I don't know, is like his world championship feels a little weird to me. And for him to win it again, there's like no denying that he's just like a world champion for 4 straight years. So I don't know. It's a very interesting situation.
It is interesting. I think, you know, with the trials he's been through of the last year, I feel like a lot of people forgot just how good he is at his best.
Yeah.
So I'd really love to see him, you know, get to continue to show that a little bit.
Yeah. And it's a cool bounce back story. It's a great lesson for all of us out there who have those bad runs where we're like, am I washed up? Is it time to call it quits? And Ding's like, no, keep going. You can work through it. That's exciting.
Absolutely.
Okay. So you said you only had the chance to play a little Blitz today. And then you sounded kind of, I don't know, like, oh, that's bad for me. Do you do it anyway knowing it's bad for you, or are you like, no, it's fine, it's part of the process?
I go back and forth on it, really. I do not think Blitz is good for my game overall. I do think it's a great way to explore ideas that I won't in, you know, classical or even rapid games.
Okay.
So I tend to like play some openings in Blitz that I won't play in, you know, quote unquote real games. I think you can also tell that if you look at my ratings. My chess.com Blitz rating like hovers around 900 and Rapid I'm around 1550. So
oh wow, yeah, that's a pretty big gap.
Yeah,
I feel similarly about my Blitz rating. My Blitz rating is like, I'm too tired to take a game for real, so I won't play Rapid. I'm in the mood to try some wild moves. I'm like, whatever, it's just a Blitz game, doesn't even matter.
Exactly. And I try not to, like, I know a lot of people talk about like tilting off Blitz points. That's like, I don't really do that because I don't really pay attention to my rating in Blitz a whole lot. So
yeah, I'm the same way. My Blitz rating is like crept up to 1500 and I'm like, oh, how'd that happen? Because it often creeps down to like 1300. I'm like, oh well. Okay.
So,
well,
so I take it your Blitz rating is not as far off your other ratings as mine.
It's pretty far off. Like my rapid on chess.com is 1900, so it is like 500 to 600 depending on the day. So yeah, I don't know. It's like you said, I don't really take it seriously. And I guess that's a problem for me, right? Like even if I'm not taking chess seriously, I drop off considerably. Like at school, when I play some random kid who barely knows how to play, I'll blunder whole pieces and they'll just be like, I thought you were good at this. And I'm like, eh, whatever. I'm not really taking it seriously.
Yeah, I think that's very much how I treat Blitz. So I'm with you there.
Okay. So what is your main time control of choice then?
I really prefer classical chess. Like, give
Okay.
me, an hour, 90 minutes more makes me happy. I found it's really hard to get really slow time controls online. I'll get one on Lee Chess every now and then. Like, I'll play a 45-minute, 45-second increment game on Lee Chess
Yeah.
every now and then, but I stick to rapid, like 15-minute, 10-second increment. But I live for over the board, so.
Have you considered doing like the special leagues, the 45-45 leagues and stuff like that on Lee Chess?
I have. My schedule makes it really difficult sometimes.
Okay.
I travel a lot for work. So it's something I would like to do, but it's not something I've explored yet.
Okay. Yeah, I was on some amazing team that I was loving doing in one of those leagues, and I had to take a bye in like half the games because I couldn't make the schedules work. And I was like, this is a bad idea. I'm just hurting my team here. What am I doing?
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing I don't really want to do. Like, if I'm gonna commit to it, play, I really want to play.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the nice thing is, I think I have a chestnut board in the works here, and I'm looking to hook it up online. And see, like, can I get real enjoyment out of a longer game if it feels like I'm playing over the board? Maybe I'll get like a dummy of Magnus Carlsen that can sit in the chair across from me so it feels like I'm playing a real
There
person.
you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could be
I
great.
like it.
Can it go as real as possible? Okay.
You get one of Hikaru too. You can like switch them out.
Yeah. This is
If
good.
you if you're if
Actually.
you if you want to play a villain, get a Hans or maybe a Kramnik.
I think better. I'll just get one of the people at my chess club so it feels more realistic. They'll be like, excuse me, why do you have a cardboard cutout of me? It just makes me feel better. Yeah, it'd be a little weird. I think I can admit that. All right. Let's go back in time for a minute before we dive into what you've been up to. You have a pretty interesting backstory with chess. So when did you begin? Did you begin as a little kid? Did you begin recently? What's going on?
Well, I think it depends what you mean by begin. The
Yeah.
first time I played chess, I was like 5 years old with
Ooh.
my dad. And we played like very occasionally through most of my childhood. I don't think I played anyone that wasn't my dad until high school, probably, though.
Okay.
So, and as far as like taking it semi-seriously, I would say it wasn't until around college or after that.
Okay.
And my first over the board tournament was less than 3 years ago. So,
Okay. So you basically you have kind of a little bit of an on again, off again, not very serious relationship with chess. Is it kind of just like one of the games in your house that you might play?
that's what it was. Not any now it is
Yeah.
like now it is like I'm looking for every spare minute I can to put into the game. I have definitely stopped playing other games that I enjoyed to focus more on chess.
Okay.
And I'm trying to work some of those things back into my life a little bit now, but chess is, there was always a game in my life that was the priority. Because I just love games. But right now, the last couple of years, that's been chess, and I intend to keep it that way.
Okay. Yeah, I think we're pretty similar in that way. For like 7 years for me, maybe almost 10 years, it was card games, and I really enjoyed a variety of card games, and I still do, but I find card games are this ever-changing metagame, and if I'm trying to take chess seriously, it's very hard to also be on top of another game that's always changing.
Yeah, I played, I'm sure you're familiar with it to one extent or another. I played Magic the Gathering competitively, like as a teenager and in college. I graduated, quote unquote, from that to poker. I
Okay.
spent a lot of years playing poker. I still play poker every now and then. But Sometimes I look back on it and I'm like, but what if I had put all that time into chess?
Yeah, I think we all have that wonder. Okay. My favorite Magic story, I picked it up, I don't know, maybe like 4 years ago for like a year. And I ended up playing in like the top four against one of my students. It was so surreal and I felt so awkward. And people are like, will the teacher beat the student?
That is fantastic.
They're all teenagers, so they're all rooting for my student. Like, beat that old man. I'm like, okay, guys, come on now.
And you didn't offer him a better grade to?
No, there was no bribery that happened, okay. But I really wanted to beat him quite bad.
I bet you did. I understand.
But alas, it was not my day. Okay. Yeah. So you have moved on from poker games. You moved on from card games. You're in chess. What lured you into chess? Like, poker's a pretty exhilarating experience. What pulled you away from it into chess?
Well, so I'll talk about poker real briefly. I actually took some time away from college to play poker professionally, a lifetime ago, it feels like now. And that was an important part of my life for a long time. The older I get, the less I enjoy being in a poker room. The environment, you know, your mileage may vary, but I find the environment to be unpleasant. There's not a lot of happiness in casinos, if we're being completely honest. And just like, as I try to like lead a healthier and more enjoyable life, I find that that's a place I want to spend less time.
Interesting. I think a lot of people think of casinos as like mythical fairylands where your dreams could come true and cash could come raining out of the sky upon you.
I think if you like borderline live in them for a while, which I certainly did, you realize that, you know, that's not the case. Poker was a job.
Yeah.
I tell people that poker was the hardest job I ever had. I was successful. It was fun too, but very stressful, and it's a tough gig. Chess, I've always loved chess. And it's just always taken a backseat to other things. I've followed pretty much every world championship match of my adult life. I think I paid attention like peripherally when I was younger than that, but like the first one I really remember looking at the games was Kramnik Kasparov. It was a natural progression. And then so now I'm here, I'm playing all the time and setting goals and trying to improve.
So would you say Kasparov Kramnik brought you in full time? Because that's a long time ago, aren't we
talking about
early 2000s? Okay.
No. I loved watching it. I talked about it with people and then I forgot about it.
And then
I'd play some games and then I'd forget about it. If you look at my chess.com rating graph, there's several gaps of a year or more between games. What brought me in full time was the last candidates tournament.
Oh, okay.
I had started playing again during the pandemic, a lot of time to sit in front of a computer, and I was watching that as well. And I was really enjoying it and realized that I wanted to put some time into it. My best friend, his name's Phil, has a similar relationship, as I do to chess before I started taking it seriously. But him and I would like watch games and talk about it. And we had a really interesting conversation about adult improvement while I was on vacation a couple of years ago. And that is really what got me moving in the direction of, oh, I'm going to take this seriously. I'm going to play over the board and see where it goes.
Would you guys make like a prop bet? I can become GM in 3 months.
No prop bets. We're both off that. But I was actually speaking to him earlier tonight, and the conversation was, can somebody our age become a national master if they've never played serious chess? I think we've seen this conversation take place online. I would say there's a lot of different opinions on it, and the majority of people would say it's borderline impossible.
Especially higher rated players.
Yeah. I like trying hard things.
You're taking it on as a challenge, not as like, it's my goal. If I don't make it, I'm a failure.
Yeah, definitely don't look at it that way. We were talking about this tonight actually, and he asked me what I would put my odds at.
Oh, okay.
And I said, and I think this is, I said, I think this is a very, I said, I think I'm being arrogant here. I said, I think I've got a 20% chance if I stay out. He thinks I have a 35% chance.
Okay, well, that's cool.
So to be
Believes in
clear,
you.
like I am not the optimist in the conversation.
Okay.
So is that realistic? Probably not.
Who
My
knows?
goal for the coming year is to hit 1450. So
Okay. What's well, a very reasonable short-term goal? So you're looking at any type of master goal is a long-term goal for you then.
right. It that is a and I think a challenge is even a better way of putting it than a goal. I'm not going to be upset if I don't get there. I think it's a ridiculous mountain to try and climb, and I like challenging myself, as you
Okay.
said.
Yeah. Nice.
So it's let's take it one step at a time. Let's get to 1450 and then see what I think from there.
Yeah. It's funny because a couple of years ago, I was like, yeah, I think it's doable. Like I'm making good progress. And then here we are a couple of years later where my rating just keeps oscillating and going way back down. I'm like, maybe I can't do it. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe like 1800 needs to be like the stretch goal. I don't know anymore.
I mean, 1800's an impressive rating, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So, I think I have some things going for me in the re in that this regard that most men in their 40s don't have going for them, which is I don't have a lot of responsibility.
Okay.
I mean, I have a job, I have a house, I have a partner. I don't have kids though.
Yeah.
My job is, it's a full-time job, but it's not, I'm not exhausted at the end of the day, usually. I've been lucky with my health. So, like, I look at all those things and I think, well, if you're 44 and you can put 3 hours a day into chess, you have a better chance than
Yeah.
if you can't do
Yeah,
that.
definitely.
So,
That seems to be the secret sauce, by the way. Of all the people who have made big ratings games late in life, it's like, how'd you do it? The answer is, I put a lot of time into it.
I think that's right. And I mean, there was a story recently, I don't remember the man's name, but somebody came back to chess in their late 30s after a long gap and like completed their IM norms.
Yeah.
So it's adult improvement is not impossible. It's just also not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. I'm a big believer that anyone can improve at anything at any age. The question, though, is how much will you consider enough, right? Like anyone can pick up chess and gain 50 rating points if they put in the time, but if your goal was to gain 900 rating points, you might be disappointed. I don't know. Okay.
I think that's right. I think it's important to, that's why it's important to have short-term goals too, right?
Exactly. All right. Well, I mean, it seems like you made a lot of progress really quick. What was like in a year, you went from like 700 to 1150 or something. What would you say? How did you do this? I guess let's start with you get into chess. Where do you start? Do you Google like how to get better at chess?
So my baseline rating from just like years of playing rapid games on chess.com was around 1,000.
Okay.
Whenever I'm trying to do something like this, particularly if it involves a game, the first thing I do is sit down with my friend Phil, mentioned earlier. He has been at the top of a few mountains. Currently he's running like 100-mile races and things like that.
Wow.
He
Okay.
yeah, he So it's like, oh, I want to do something crazy. What's the process? And him and I'll break things down together and go about it. The process, it turns out, is time.
Okay.
For me, we did things. So him and I worked together at the beginning a little bit on this, and we did things completely backwards from what every expert will tell you to do. They say,
Interesting.
oh, you're 1,000 rating. Don't think about openings at all, right?
Yeah.
We hear this all the time.
Right.
The first thing we did was lock in openings.
Oh, okay.
And I have not diverged from that in the 3 years I've been playing in taking it seriously. I think that does give me an advantage in that, like, I'm never in the first 10 moves of a game completely lost.
Okay.
It just never happens. I also don't really have to think about it other than maybe look over a few things before a tournament. Which means I can spend all of my time focusing on calculation, tactics, middle game, and recently end game work.
Okay.
And like, my goal is to never have to think about that again. Just get incrementally better at each of those openings and like, but really find the bulk of my improvement in every other aspect of the game.
Interesting. I guess my question is, how did you decide what openings to pick to never diverge from if you didn't really know how to play chess well yet?
Well, I mean, I don't know what we consider playing well. Like, I feel like a thousand rated chess.com player knows the basics, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So what we also had a pretty good understanding of what higher level prep looks like because we watch a lot of high level chess.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in my 40s. I don't have time to learn deep variations. I don't want to have to know a bunch of theory, all of that, right?
Yeah.
So we picked openings both for white and black that really limit that.
Okay.
And it's been very effective. What's really funny is I have a better score with black than I do with white over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So
I think that happens a lot of times, especially for lower rated players where that white advantage isn't quite as big. And I often felt the same way. I was like, I get to play what I want to play then if I'm black. As white, you're like, I don't know. What are we going to play, right? As black, you really get to define it.
It can feel that way.
Yeah. So I don't know if you're comfortable sharing, but what openings did you end up selecting?
I mean, we'll get so much hate for this. I play the London.
Okay.
That was probably an easy guess. There is another similar opening that I've been looking at that has a slight difference from the London, but I'm not quite there yet.
Okay.
And I don't think I'm gonna switch, but it'd just be nice to be able to play something else, right?
Sure.
And then with black, I play the Slav against D4 and the Karo against D4.
Solid openings. I can understand that. And it's not, especially if you're playing the London, you probably don't run into too many situations where, like, on move four, your opponent is playing something totally bananas and you're out of book because kind of everyone knows how to play the London.
Very rarely. The thing that makes me most nervous is the Dutch, but I don't think I've ever lost to it. So, and then there's the most critical line against it is maybe knight f6 followed by c5. And that can be tough, but that doesn't get played, you know, outside very high level games for the most part. So
So it sounds like you put in the time to learn your openings, but you intentionally chose openings where you didn't have to put that much time in.
That's exactly right.
Okay. And I think that's a fair approach. I think the danger is when you're about 1,000 and you're like, I'm going to master the Nidorf, and then no one even plays the Nidorf against you. You spend all this time memorizing lines and they never show up on the board. I think that's where that warning of like, don't spend too much time worrying about openings comes from.
I have a funny story about that. I was at a tournament. I think it was the Liberty Bell Open last year. I walk out of the room after my game and there's a couple guys standing there talking. And one of them goes, I just never know what to do against the Nidorf.
Mm.
And I looked at him and I said, I'm so glad I'm never going to have to think about that sentence.
Yeah. I mean, if you just chuck out E4, it gets complicated real fast. okay. Well, that sounds interesting. So you've really, or I guess in the past, you really leaned into kind of mastering your openings. And is the reason because you feel like you know the plans pretty well? It's a confidence booster that you know you don't have to worry. Like, what's the main impetus for this?
So there were a couple things. One of them is the confidence boost of like, just I know, because as you know, like knowing an opening is great, but if you've memorized it and you don't understand the plans, disaster awaits you. So really understanding the plans, I have a great coach who helped me with that. Lion Chess, his name's Sandro. Ooh, from Croatia.
Yeah. Former guest of the show.
Community.
Yeah.
Great guy. He really helped me understand the plans of what I'm trying to do, which is wonderful. But the other piece of it is, like, I can build off of all that knowledge. Like, I'm learning about pawn structures now, right? And I know what pawn structures I get. So I can get really deep knowledge about those pawn structures and really try to improve that way.
Okay. So it sounds like it's shaping even like your strategy work. The work you do for strategy, you can sort of tailor it to the openings that you're playing.
Yes. I can like I want to like that's the it's weird because it is inverted from what everybody recommends, but it's like that set the foundation for everything else.
Yeah,
On
I
League
can.
Chess, you can do puzzles that come out of your specific openings,
Yeah,
which
exactly.
is a wonder, which is wonderful.
I think the thing that's always made me nervous about this approach is that I hear some high-level players, I feel like Andras Toth is kind of the poster child for this, of saying like, well, if you do that, now you're only understanding a small part of chess, right? Like you've left out all these structures you'll never see, all these different environments you won't see. I don't know what to make about that. Does that ever worry you?
I feel like he said that in a very specific video. I love a lot of what he puts out. I think it depends what you're trying to get out of chess, right? I can get a lot out, like I can watch games that of people that don't play my openings and they're rich and wonderful to watch and I can learn from them. At the end of the day, I would much rather go to a chess tournament and grind out six wins than go to a chess tournament and lose six beautiful games.
Yeah, I hear that.
Like that's I think that's really what it comes down to, and maybe that's too results oriented. It certainly is for him. But I'm also I'm 44 years old. I'm not gonna learn the Nidorf. I'm not gonna learn all of the different beautiful ways to play an e4 opening. It's not a realistic way to spend my time.
Yeah, that seems fair to me. I know it's something I've wrestled with this last year as I've continually lost rating points. I'm like, but I played so well. It was just that one error. And it's like, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Like, just win the games. Like, enough of this. I played so well and lost.
Isn't that what hurts the most in chess, though? Like you look at a game, you analyze a game afterwards, and you played wonderfully. And then there's this like one move, and the whole position crumbles and you lose. And in the case of an over the board tournament, you maybe spent 4 hours doing it. I think that's in many ways the toughest part of chess.
I know. And it's funny because the engine is like deluding me into being like, look, man, every one of your games is in the 80s, even when you lose. And I'm like, well, that's not that helpful. Like, I lost the game. So I don't know. It's been frustrating.
So where do you come down? Where do you come down on engine use? Because I know I'm a member of the Chess Dojo. I put it, as you can see, I've really expanded the number of places I try to learn about chess, and they're very against engine use. I can't help myself. I need to see what the engine thinks after I play a game.
So the way I do it is classical games, I try not to use it. I will play my game. Okay, this is the way I cheat with the engine though. I've not cheat over the board, but
Of
by
course, of
making
course.
use of the engine to analyze my game. I go over my games myself and then I go over them with my coach. But right after I put the game in and I've sort of gone over it myself, I run it through an engine, not in the study, just in another engine, just to get the number, right? Of like, oh, you were 88%. And I don't actually look at the analysis until I go over the game with my coach. And then he's usually the one who's using the engine to guide it. But rapid games, I can't do that. I just use the engine.
I need to see the number.
I do too. I'm kind of addicted to the grade, right?
I'm right there with you. Now, chess.com added something that really confuses me, where they'll like tell you like the rating level you played the game at as well. And I don't know what to make of that. They keep telling me I'm playing, I like you played this game at a 2500 level, and I'm like, stop lying.
It's the most absurd thing I've ever seen. It'll be like, your opponent hung two pieces, they were an 1800. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I've played a lot of tournament games. 1800s do not hang pieces like that. What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's, I mean, 1200s don't hang pieces like that anymore. Maybe they did at one point, but
Exactly. I don't quite understand. I think the number is just a feel good number until
think
it's low, and then you're like, wait, what? Played
then it's
pretty
a feel
well.
bad number.
I don't know. These whole numbers are mysterious, and I haven't really enjoyed that
Yeah,
piece.
I don't understand it, but I do love seeing the accuracy score.
Yes. I also like to see when I play like a 2300. That's great. I love it.
Oh, yeah, a big
Keep
pat on the back, right?
that coming. Okay. Openings, that's where you started. Interesting. And then where have you gone from there? Or I guess I should say, where did openings get you? Did you go almost exclusively openings for a while?
No, I would say I think we did our opening work in a week.
Oh, wow. Okay. Gotcha.
Like we did our opening work in a week, and then it was puzzle rush, puzzle rush, puzzle rush.
Ah, okay.
And then that didn't get me where I wanted to be. And that's when I found a coach.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So probably you heard like, all you got to do is focus on tactics. Yep. That gets you to like 2000 and you're like, okay, cool. Yep. And then it didn't actually do that for you.
Well, it's really confusing because you'll do a puzzle rush and you'll hit like 45, 46. Like I do pretty well on puzzle rush. And then you'll go to a tournament, lose to a 700, and you're like, so something's clearly missing.
Were you losing on tactics or are you just losing on like chess knowledge stuff?
Honestly, I think I was losing to, I've played chess online my whole life.
Oh, yeah.
And the change to playing over the board was really hard for me. And tournament chess is exhausting.
Yeah.
Really. I think I have finally gotten to a place where I can like make it through a whole tournament without just being completely wiped out, but it's taken 2 years to get there.
Okay. So one of the questions I was going to ask you, you talked about some tournaments that you left early. Was that part of the reason why you left those tournaments early? Was you were starting to hit the wall of exhaustion?
So the St. Louis, so there's two tournaments that I left early this year, the Mid-America Open in St. Louis and the Atlantic Open in DC. The Mid-America Open, it was 100% exhaustion. Now I had flown into the Midwest for work, spent the whole week out there working, and then driven from Nashville to St. Louis.
Oh, wow.
To play chess. So, I mean, it was like, I think I bit off more than I could chew that week, just in terms of life in general. The DC one was a different story.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess we'll start with the St. Louis one. So, what's your recommendation? I'm always so torn on this. Like, if I pay money for a big tournament and I fly out to it, I feel so compelled to play all the games because even the losses, I learned something. So how did you have like that courage just to be like, I gotta cut it here. Like, this is not helping me.
When I realized that I wasn't playing well enough even to learn from the games.
Oh, yeah.
That's actually what did it to me. After the second day, I went to a restaurant. I was sitting there having dinner. I was looking over the two games I had played that day. And the lesson I got from those games was I was not in a good state to play chess.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, so I can push myself to play these next two games and not be happy pretty much no matter what happens.
Yeah.
Or I can admit that I've pushed myself too far, take a day to rest, and, you know, get back to life.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was really, that was what I decided to do.
Okay. Okay. The second one, you said you left the second one not because of exhaustion. Uh-oh, what happened here? I'm guessing traumatic experience.
Oh, man. So third round of the tournament, five round, you know, CCA event, typical CCA Friday night game, then two games Saturday, Sunday. I'm in DC and tournament's going okay. I'm 1.5 of two. I sit down for my third round game. My opponent plays the London and I play some surprising moves against her. And we're like, I don't know, 12, 13 moves into the game. And I notice her look up, make eye contact with somebody behind me. And then she gives a thumbs down sign, which makes sense. Like she had just like, she didn't hang anything. I won a pawn through tactics.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. Like, and I just kind of ignore it. And we're playing on. And she does a really good job of complicating the position. So I'm up a pawn, but you know, major pieces are still on the board. It's very messy. And I watch her look up again. And then she like gives like a hand, like she shakes her hand back and forth, like, either way. And it's like, it's like, okay. Like, and that's when I should have said something. Because she's communicating with somebody.
Right.
But like, I'm trying to be nice about it. She's like a 14-year-old girl, maybe 14, 15.
Feels like it's probably innocent communication, but probably can only carry you so far.
Then about half an hour after that, she looks up again and she taps her bottom lip twice with a finger.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know if that's sign language. I don't know. Like, I don't know any
Yeah.
ASL. I don't know what was going on, but that was like at that point, I went and found a director and I was like, look, this is what's going on. I
Yeah.
ran him through the whole thing. He comes back over to the board. He says, did you do any of these three things? And she says, no.
Okay. Yep, that's tough.
And I'm just like, come on, man. Right?
Right.
Like, this is ridiculous. I sit down, I play a couple more moves. I can't let it go. I'm upset.
Yeah.
I go and find the actual main arbiter.
Okay.
And I explain the situation to him. The other guy comes over, explains like what he's like, I asked. She said, no, there's nothing else I can do. And at that point, I lost my temper. And
Oh.
I said, so what you're telling me is if me and a friend work up out a convoluted signaling situation, I can do that. And he says, why are you? And I'm like, okay. I go back to the game. Go back to the game and she's talking to an arbiter.
Oh, interesting.
And I sit down and he says, you touched this pawn, so you have to move it.
Oh.
And I understand touch move.
Yeah.
Apparently, when I stood up from the table, I knocked a pawn.
Oh, no. Oh, boy.
And they ruled they made a touch, they ruled touch move.
Oh no, okay.
And moving that pawn collapses my whole
Wow.
position. So I say, okay, fine, I resign and
Oh
walk away.
man. Wow. That is tough.
I was obviously very upset at the time.
Yeah.
I can look at it now with a certain amount of humor. I want to make it clear, I do not think this girl was cheating.
Yeah.
I think it's very unlikely.
Yeah.
But and this is, I think there's been a lot of discussion about cheating lately. And this is the problem is even if she's not cheating, it's very distracting. And now I have to think about this person who's behind me somewhere. And after that experience, I was like, I think I'm done for the weekend. And me and my girlfriend went and hung out in DC for the rest of the weekend, had a great time, and came
Nice.
up. And
Yeah, the whole cheating thing really casts a pall over everything, right? If, whenever you see even like two friends make eye contact to say hello, it's like, whoa, did your eyes just we move weird? Was that a signal? And you're like, no, it's two people saying hi with their eyes. I haven't seen them in
right.
a year.
So, yeah. So, I mean, like, I'll be honest. I feel a little bad about how that situation went. I know that it was hard on her, that she was very unhappy with, the way I handled the situation. And it probably was all innocent, but it just left a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
Sometimes things don't go your way, and that's all right.
Yeah. I feel fortunate that I haven't felt, at least this time around, that people were cheating. The weird thing is when I played in like the early 2000s, because you couldn't carry a powerful engine in your pocket, it was kind of more accepted to like catch up with friends during games. But what bothered me is when like a kid would walk over to their coach during the game and be talking to them in a different language. And I'm like,
Oh God.
I'm not saying you're cheating. All I'm saying is this makes me feel real weird that you have a conversation, someone points to the board, and then you come back and make an amazing move. Like, it's very possible you didn't cheat, but there's also, you could see how this would look, right? So that was very frustrating.
You can see how this would look is right. In poker they say English only at the table, right? So
Yeah.
no, that's tough. I did hear a story from a good friend of mine who this also happened to him at a CCA event, and I wasn't there, so I can't corroborate this, but he said they literally caught a kid looking at an engine during a game against him, and the arbiter convinced him to accept a draw instead of a forfeit because they didn't want to like because it was like the first time or something like that.
Yeah. I
It's
don't know what to say with all this
like,
stuff.
come on now.
I'm just hoping that I can get through playing my tournaments without someone using an engine during the game. That's my goal.
I at my level, at least now, like my feelings on it are like if it like even if the kid has a phone and goes to the bathroom,
Yeah.
Do I think like somebody's going to be able to memorize a position 42 moves in at the 12 to 1500 level? Not yeah. really.
Yeah, that's a good point. That is a good point. Okay, so you have decided you allow yourself to leave early from tournaments when it best fits your psychology. That seems healthy. I know Ben Johnson of the Perpetual Chess Podcast is a big believer in that. And I've just really had a hard time accepting that.
It's tough because you are wasting, it does feel like you're wasting money. But yeah. I think you got to put your, you know, mental or physical health first. So
yeah, I think that's the challenge for me. But hopefully I'm going to be playing in Vegas at the end of December. So I'm very excited and hopefully it goes well. We'll see.
I keep telling myself I'm going to make it to that tournament one year. It will not be this year, but maybe next year.
For some reason, I really both like the Vegas tournaments and do very well in them. And do not like very much the city of Las Vegas. So it's a really weird mix for me.
That is a weird mix. There's a lot of good food in Las Vegas, though. Yeah. So, you know, I hope you take advantage of that at least.
That's the problem. I don't. I'll eat like at the Johnny Rockets in the hotel. And like, that's my lunch. And it's probably not a good plan.
Yeah. Also, my family ways to enjoy it.
Hates when I go to Vegas tournaments because I often get sick. And then they're like... But now you're bringing the sickness back to our house. So I don't know. It's challenging. Okay. Well, so you're doing lots of Puzzle Rush. It didn't quite get you where you wanted to go. Where did this get you? Where did openings in Puzzle Rush get you?
I think like, so I started out around like, you know, the like 1720-ish rating. I want to say my rating was around like 900-ish when I started working with a coach.
Okay.
And then like, honestly, like working with Sandro really, like it felt like it really put things into overdrive, even if it didn't. Okay. I definitely learned a lot from him and I'm not working with him right now just cause like scheduling is impossible, but eventually I hope to get back to that. But like I started learning more deeply the whys of things. Mm. And that I think is what really helped the most.
Mm. Okay. So it's openings, tactics, and then now the why behind the openings, the pawn structure, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Like why is it okay at certain times to like push your pawns in front of your king and it's not okay other times. When should you, when shouldn't you?
Okay.
Things like that. And I think that's the other thing he gave me was a lot of willingness to look at the board and understand when maybe it's okay to break some principles.
Okay.
Or even when it's necessary to break some principles.
Yeah. It's one of the big challenges. I've been talking a lot with people about like, it's like writing almost. Like when you teach someone to write, you're pretty dogmatic about it, right? Like you need a thesis statement, then you need to support it with evidence and you should have this and that and that. And then students would be like, well, could I do it differently? I'm like, actually, you can write any way you want. I'm just giving you the tips that help you get started. But a good writer throws all that out the window and just crafts something amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. But you need to know that you need that foundation first.
Exactly.
So like, I mean, like I was definitely got a castle short every game. Don't touch those pawns, like all of that. Nah. I would say I'm a little more free in those things.
Okay. Yeah, now you're a little more flexible. Okay, so where did Sandro get you to ratings-wise? And also, are we talking USCF or are we talking about like chess.com or Lichess?
So chess.com, I had a baseline of like 1,000. And in the last 2.5-ish years, I've gone from 1,000 to 1,550.
Okay. That's a big game.
Which feels great. I beat two players in the last month that were like in the 1690s, and that felt really good.
Okay.
But USCF is like kind of where I focus.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the rating that really matters to me. And so I got from 1717, I think, to 1160 something in that first year.
Yeah.
Which is a huge game.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And then we continued to work together. It was over the summer, of this year that I like kind of put a pause on coaching just because my schedule wasn't allowing for it.
Yeah.
And then this year I went from I was at 1160 at the beginning of the year, or I guess I was at 1120 because my last tournament of the year last year I dive bombed. But then, so 1120-ish at the beginning of this year to 1228 now, which is will be what it is at the end of the year, because I don't have any tournaments planned.
Nice. So another 100, so it's like 300 points, and then another 100 points. You keep that up, and like 10 years to be a master.
Yeah, there you go.
I would love 100 points a year. It sounds amazing.
100 points, like 100 points a year is really, that was the number that I set out as the average that like I would feel I need to attain. Like if I look at a 5-year period of time and I gain 500 points, then I'll feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, so. I could understand that. So what have you been working on then since working with Sandra that's continued helping you on your rise?
So I took like, I did take like a 2-month break, full stop. Like I was like doing a couple puzzles a day, some Blitz. That was it.
Okay. I got to dive in here because breaks interest me a lot. I have not done one. I'm too afraid to do it. So what motivated the break?
Work just got really busy.
Okay.
And I was finding that like, it was like for the first time in this whole project, I was getting to the end of the day and I was like, man, I can't imagine sitting down and doing a puzzle rush and another 20 puzzles right now, which is really what I was trying to do. It was either puzzle rush and a bunch of puzzles or puzzle rush and a rapid game every day.
That sounds good.
So then I've eased back into it. I'm now doing puzzle rushes here and there and trying to do at least 5 to 10 puzzles a day.
Okay.
And then I'm also working through Silman's Endgame Manual.
Ooh, okay. That's a good
one. I've been approaching endgames from two directions. Silman's Endgame Manual and Naroditsky's done a video series.
Okay, yeah.
And, like, that's really where I've been focusing the last few months.
Okay, so if I say trousers, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, okay. Trousers are great.
Yeah, I love Naroditsky. He's so good at, like, coming up with the cool names and really making them memorable.
Yep. Yeah. The trousers. I think he had another name that I really liked for something and I'm not remembering it right now, but it's in my notes for sure.
Okay. I'm glad you said that.
Oh, so, it was the bathtub. I think he called.
I was going to say that actually. Okay. Yeah. That name worked for me.
But that's really helped because I was losing a lot of games where I was going into, you know, not necessarily even an unsound attack, but an attack that I didn't know how to finish.
Yeah.
And the reason for that was I didn't know what I was doing in the end game. Now I feel like I assume going into most of my games that I'll have better end game knowledge than my opponents. And that helps a lot because if I can just get up a pawn and grind things out, that's good enough.
Yeah, rook endgames might be drosh, but if the one player doesn't know how to do rook endgames, they're not drosh at all.
Exactly.
Yeah, I remember those days when my endgame knowledge like vaulted ahead of people at my rating. It was so amazing. I would trade down to bad endgames just because I knew I could outplay them.
And it's the first time in chess, and I mean, like, this is overstating it, but it's the first time something in chess has felt almost like a superpower.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's how it was for me when I learned how to castle. I remember fourth grade, I castled, and some kid was like, whoa, that's illegal. You can't move both pieces at once. And I was like, no, you can. It's a super move.
I just did.
Yeah.
And you lose.
Exactly. Auto loss. Yeah. Endgame knowledge and abilities is very powerful. Are you doing just like the sections on your rating, or are you going beyond that with someone?
The next section I'm going to do is a little bit above my rating because, like, what I'd like, ideally, I want to be one step ahead. Yeah. And that's actually another part of my whole approach to this is one of the things I did last year that I didn't do this year was play up a lot.
Okay.
Like, I was like 900 playing the under 13.
Gotcha.
This year I didn't do that as much, and I think that's why my rating game's still great, but maybe it would have been bigger if I had, you know, played the under 1400, under 1500 sections more. Okay. Because just the way USCF ratings work, and I'm not a math guy, so I don't fully grok it, but like I gained 60 points taking 2 of 5 at a tournament last year.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that seems better than going 3 of 5 and losing 3 points, which happened to me this year.
Yes, I am well versed in the playing people who are underrated and having decent scores against them and losing rating points. That has definitely been part of my journey.
And like I just feel like if I can keep my knowledge just a little bit higher than my rating and then I play up, that there's a lot of opportunity for gaining there. So that's really the goal.
But it sounds like you also had a really enjoyable experience getting to win money and place in an event. So that must have been exciting. Take us through that.
This last tournament, it's funny because I did. I went back and forth. I didn't register till the day of it. It's like, well, am I going to play the under 12 or the under 14? And I decided to play the under 12 in part because 6 rounds is a longer tournament. And it's like, okay, well, I'm already signing up for a longer tournament. Let's not make it too much harder than it needs to be. And yeah, this was the tournament. This is the best tournament I've had so far. I said to Phil today, there were only two moves the whole tournament I wish I had could take back.
Wow, nice.
And they were consecutive moves in my only loss.
Oh,
So
okay, cool. You got to put them in one game. That's
yeah,
great.
exactly. I was in a winning position. I made a bad queen move that equalized, and then I played a worse queen move that lost me the game.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. But other than that, it was a really enjoyable tournament. My favorite thing about it is normally the quality of play for me goes down over the course of a tournament.
Oh, okay.
And in this time it was completely different. My
Interesting.
quality of play increased throughout the tournament. The last game in particular, I was very proud of. The person really knew what they wanted to do with their opening against me and played something I had never seen, played like a variation I had not seen. And I like over the board really thought through like what the weakness in his position was and proceeded to win a really challenging game.
Nice.
And I knew going in that winning that game mattered from not just a rating perspective, but from a finish perspective.
Oh, so that's a big pressure
I
game
didn't
too.
know how much it was going to matter because I thought there were going to be a lot of people at 4.5 points at the end of the tournament
Out of six, right?
out of six.
Okay. Yeah, it seems like
And
there would be.
it was so crazy. I finished first out of the whole group
Oh, wow.
and then watched as every like literal there
Oh.
were 3 other matches at of people at 3.5. They
Yeah.
all drew.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Which left me in a tie for third with a young woman who also drew, but drew she drew playing down from 4 points. So that left us tied for third. And the winner was their first tournament, which means a lot of the money trickled down. Which, like, I mean, man, I gotta tell you, like 20 years ago, just out of college, a $550 chess tournament win would have felt huge. Is it life-changing now? No, but it's really cool. And now since we can do online deposits, I get to keep the check. So
Ooh.
that'll go in a scrapbook or something.
Yeah, that is really fun. I hadn't thought about that. It's almost like your trophy from the event.
That is also a funny story. The kid that won the under 1,000 section asked the arbiter when the award ceremony was.
Ah, yes. He's gone to some scholastic events.
And this arbiter, this old tired arbiter who had just been through a long weekend of looks at him and goes, "This is chess. We're not going to celebrate you."
Well, this kid's been to scholastic events. They give trophies
Oh
down to
my,
like 20th place.
I was laughing so hard.
God, that is funny. My daughter always stays for the trophy ceremony. She usually gets a trophy like giant, half her body size for like fourth place. It's pretty amazing.
You've got a room set aside for them
Her bedroom has a
then?
big trophy area. And in
That's
fact, there
fantastic.
was an accident and one of them got broken. And she was like, eh, I got a lot more. And I was like, wow, okay. I only have the one
Wow.
and it's tiny and it was for first place. So,
Well, hey, well, that's good that she's getting a lot of trophies and enjoying it sounds like.
exactly. She's doing well and having fun. And she has a little chess buddy and they go to the events together. I'm pretty jealous, actually. I'm like, this is amazing. I wish I could have done this as a kid.
That is the one thing that I was hoping would happen with chess as an adult that has not happened. I was like, oh, I'm gonna make a lot of new friends. Zero new friends.
Wow. Well, listeners,
zero is an overstatement.
Gotta reach out to him. Okay. All right. Well, that's unfortunate. I've gone the other route. I've made some very good friends through chess. I made a lot of acquaintances through chess. So it's been really good for me in that way.
That's what I really hoped for. I think like part of it is there's not like an active chess club where I live. Yeah. There's a couple of informal things, but like it's not really clear when or where they happen. So, and you know, you go to these bigger tournaments and you know, everybody's really focused on what they're doing. In a lot of cases, they're there with their kids. Yeah. And it's just such like, that's my other big goal for this year is like, let's make some chess friends.
Okay. That's a good goal. I really think the way to do it is the club. I think you need to figure out where and when that informal club meets. That actually sounds like a really good place to make friends too, because people aren't quite as like geared up to destroy their opponent, which is part of the problem with the big events, right? It's like, I paid thousands of dollars in airfare and hotel. I don't want to talk to you right now, you chump. I'm getting ready for battle.
That's exactly right. And you do. You spent, like, I had no idea how much money I was going to be spending on chess to go to these tournaments, and I'm spending a lot of money.
Right. It's a, quote, free game. And you're like, no, it's not.
It's really not.
My wife is not thinking of it as a free game. Okay. I did see in your notes you said you played at the Alto, and I'm always curious to talk about the Alto. It's the tournament that I most want to attend that I haven't been able to. What drew you to it, and what was your experience like?
I mean, what drew me to it was, I imagine, what draws other people to it, which is not playing with kids, both from the standpoint of, man, the kids are so good.
Yeah, like, they're good.
They are. It's brutal. But also just like, it's a different atmosphere. And like, I would say 100%, you haven't made it yet, you got to make it to one of these. The atmosphere is amazing. Everybody, it's still competitive, but it just, it has a different feel, like much, much more relaxed vibe.
Yeah.
I had so much fun. The mixer, they had a mixer Saturday night. That was fun. And I did. I met some very cool people there. I got to meet Nate Solon, which was cool. I think he might have won it, actually. I'm not sure.
He did, yeah.
And it was just it was a very cool experience. I will 100% go back to the trip down to Charlotte for things they run. Just fantastic all the way around. Definitely make it to one of them.
Yeah, I'm trying. And my good friend Jay works there, and he's always like, come out. And I'm like, I'm coming. I guarantee. And then something always comes up, and he's like, wow, okay. Stop guaranteeing you're coming out because you've never made it yet.
Don't guarantee it next time. If you don't guarantee it, everything will fall into place and you'll get to go.
Yeah. So that's good. I'm going to say like, no, probably not. And then the world will support me and I'll get to go. Okay. Well, it sounds like you've had a really great time so far with chess. You've made a lot of ratings gain. You've enjoyed your journey. You've got some healthy goals. So let's say people want to become your friend. How can they reach out to you and communicate with you?
This is JDF on Twitter or Blue Sky. Best way to reach me, probably. It's very obvious, particularly on Blue Sky, that chess is like one of the things I'm there for. That's like, I spend way too much time on social media. So find me on social media and we'll be friends. This is JDF on chess.com and LeeChess too.
Okay.
So I'm easy to find.
And we know where to find you. And, thanks so much for coming on. I really enjoyed this conversation. I'm always jealous, I got to admit, of the early journey. It just seems so fun. Like, you're learning new things and you get big ratings gains. And I'm like, I learned new things and I lost 150 points. It's just,
lost me 150 points and $1,000. Yeah. It is really fun. I hope I'm enjoying it this much 2 years from now. I think I will be, but
yeah. Sounds like you have a good attitude. I feel like the people that really struggle are the people who are like, if I don't gain 500 points a year, I'm going to be disappointed. And it's like, you might. I'm not telling you won't, but that's a tall bar to have to cross.
It's and like, kids can do it a lot easier than we can. My last little funny story. I looked at the first person I played this year.
Okay.
She was rated 950.
Uh-oh.
in the first round of the Liberty Bell Open.
Yep.
She's rated over 1700 today. And I'm just like, really?
Yeah. Yep. And it's possible you put more work in. If you're doing 3 hours a day, I don't know that you
do. I mean, I don't know. We'll check in next year. I'll let you know how I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is fascinating how they can just pile on the points quick.
It's wild. Like, she's going to be a national master next year.
We've got a guy, a kid, he was 700, something like 3 months ago. He's already 1,300 and crushing our club championship. He's likely to go from like 700 to 1,700 in about 6 months. That's just mind-boggling.
Mind-boggling is exactly the word I had in mind for that. Like,
but I can't even be jealous of it. It's just too much. It doesn't even seem realistic.
That's the thing. Like, I don't think I'm jealous of it. I think I'm in awe of it.
Yeah.
Like, and that's how I felt when I looked at this. Like, she played a great game against me.
Yeah.
So like, I knew then that she was pretty good, but like, I didn't know she was going to be at 1700 at the end of the year.
Yeah, that's remarkable. Well, hats off to all the juniors out there gaining 500 points or more in a year. Congratulations. And to everyone else out there, I hope you can gain 50 points this year. That's my reasonable goal for you all. If you do, congrats. If not, come back next week. We'll have another guest for you. And I hope you have a great one. Bye, everybody.